Welcome to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesch of Flesch Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesch Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesch Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesch.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley. We are glad you're with us. Our show is brought to you by Flesch Law. 303-806-8886 is the number. Kevin Flesch joins us once again. Mr. Flesch, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Scott?
I'm good, man.
Good.
Got to spend a little time last week having some fun.
Absolutely, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really nice to be up in Alaska and doing fun stuff up there. But here we are, back at it.
Back at it once again. I mean, it hits quick when you come back to work, doesn't it?
It is.
I mean, you just jump back in and...
Yeah. Especially last week, it was interesting because we came back on Thursday and so worked on Friday. So that one day last week, it was nice actually to get some stuff caught up because we do, you know, in today's technology, you are responding to emails and things like that.
Sure.
In the evening, stuff like that. But otherwise, getting back in the one day last week was nice so that things aren't crazy when you come back on Monday.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you've probably seen this. It just started on September 1st here in the Denver area, Waymo, the driverless car system that has come. How many cars they've put out here, I don't really know. I did see this on the news and immediately texted Kevin and said, man, what about insurance? How does all this work? And come to find out, Mr. Flesch has been in a Waymo.
I have. Okay. I have. We were down in Phoenix a few years ago, and they had them down there. They piloted them, I think, in sort of warmer climates that don't have the sort of weather that we have here in Denver pretty early on. And I think it's been a couple of years, Phoenix, San Francisco, a couple other warmer, larger cities. And so they're super interesting. And we're all going to get sort of used to them being around. I mean, it's like when the... when the scooters started to appear and all of the electric bikes, sort of the rental sort of market for all of those things, you're like, what's up with that? This is another one of those things because the vehicles themselves look kind of funky.
Yeah.
And then they have a whole bunch of different devices on the outside of the vehicle that would, because they need to have all of those sensors so that they can react to things that are in the environment. And so it was, so we were down there. And we just happened, we used regular rideshare to get from our hotel to the restaurant downtown Phoenix. And then while we're sitting there having dinner, looking out the window, we keep seeing these strange looking cars that are driving around with nobody in them other than passengers in the back.
Right.
And so we were talking with our server and did a little research online and realized that you'd have to get the app. And then so we tried it going home, and it was quite strange. I think the best way to describe it for your first time doing it is it's sort of like a Disney ride. I mean, you feel like you're getting into a roller coaster and losing all control. At least both my wife and I felt that way.
Right.
But yeah, you on the app, much like the other rideshare, it has a GPS function from your phone, so it knows where you're at, and then you tell them where you want to go. And then the app then communicates with you and the car as to where to meet. And then you meet at that location, and then there's a code that you get from Waymo that you put in. The car is locked, and then once you put the code in and it verifies it's you, then the vehicle opens. And then you get in the back of the vehicle, and then the vehicle talks to you a little bit about who you are and confirms, you know, some information. In our particular ride, it also would give you the opportunity to decide what music you wanted to listen to, those sorts of things. And then you're off. You get in the back, and away you go, and there's nobody sitting in the front seat. It sort of reminded me, oh, and this is dating me, but, you know, those old movies with the airplane movies, you know, where they had the autopilot, and sort of blows up and
comes on. Yeah.
You think that something like that would happen, but it doesn't. There's nobody in the vehicle. And so our ride, I mean, was through downtown traffic. The vehicle was making sure that the pedestrians that were walking by in this crosswalk, so that it didn't hit those. And then also we turned left on a stoplight and regular traffic and moved in different lanes. So it was quite surprising how well it worked. And we had the conversation while we were doing it, sort of, you know, is this really how things are going to progress in our lives? And I think it is.
Yeah.
Much like AI, I think we're going to get some autonomous vehicles, especially in Colorado, now that they've figured out. It'll be interesting to see what happens with weather. My guess is that when we have weather issues, that these vehicles won't run or won't run as regularly. So they're probably not something that you want to rely on when we have a big snowstorm. But it will be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. A friend of mine just bought a truck recently, and it has, I forgot the exact name of it, but it's a Chevy, and has a system in it where, you know, you can, and it kind of makes sure your eyes are always up and different things like that. But
you don't have to have your hands on the wheel.
Yeah, you don't have to have your hands on the wheel and everything. But we've all seen, been sitting at a light or something where you see a motorcycle blows a light or a car blows a light, and you just wonder how fast of reaction.
Yeah.
You know, you were telling me before we came on air that, you know, it seems all the sensors and, boy, it doesn't do anything really quickly.
Right.
But you think when it's driving, a light turns green, maybe you're the third car, and then all of a sudden somebody blows something.
Yeah. Whew. No, I agree with you. I think that that's going to be the interesting part of this. This sort of experiment that we're running with now. I mean, you think about the vehicles now. I have a vehicle too. Same thing, where as long as you have the hand, as long as the wheel of the vehicle can feel that you have a hand there and that you're controlling things a little bit, it does drive. I mean, we've got a Kia that will do that. And driving through Nebraska, since there aren't many turns on I-80 across Nebraska,
that's true.
It's pretty convenient. But I was in a vehicle recently. It was a Subaru that I was in recently that there was an eye monitor somehow that was really annoying, because it's always watching your eyes to see where your eyes are. But sometimes you're looking over, you know, just to the left at whatever. It's not anything that you're distracted in any way. And it'll say where, you know, it'll blink or it'll give you a beep like your eyes aren't on the road. But it is. But so we're going to see all of these sort of technologies and decide what we want to do with it as we progress here. But this Waymo is a really interesting situation. So they started September 1st sort of commercially, regularly having passengers, that passengers can start using these vehicles. There was actually the first Waymo, at least in Denver, the first accident that a Waymo was involved in on August 27th. And this is what it reads about this incident. So the unoccupied Waymo came to a stop at a travel location west of 8th Avenue near Delaware Street, near Denver Health. There was no intersection, no stop sign, no crosswalk. An individual stopped his van behind the Waymo. Seconds later, another driver, so the third driver, car hit the van. So because they were sort of in the middle of an intersection or anything else, but the van had stopped, the third car rear-ended the second car, which rear-ended the Waymo. So airbags were deployed, and both drivers walked away with minor injuries. Both were left with the same question asked on the camera, like, what do I do to explain to my insurance company how this happened? The third vehicle was cited for following too closely, because the police officer thought that even because the Waymo had stopped theoretically for a pedestrian in the road, that the third party should have been able to stop their car in time and not cause this accident. The question is whether or not the Waymo vehicle was correct in the way that it handled the situation, if it really needed to stop, and whether there was really a pedestrian in the roadway. That's what the argument is going to be about. So it's sort of interesting, because everything, much like a Tesla, everything is probably recorded around the vehicle. So there should be good footage of what exactly took place and what that vehicle was reacting to. So that'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because just what you're talking about with regard to the person that blows through the red light, or, you know, just a human driver doing something that's negligent by itself.
Right.
How does this vehicle react to it?
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, in the very short period of time that I was in the vehicle, my experience was, I think the vehicle, a Waymo vehicle, will not react. In other words, it'll stop or take some evasive action to be less maybe aggressive than a human would be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's going to be the interesting thing as to whether or not how all of these cases kind of transpire. But you would be able to make, so really interesting. So here's a situation in which a Waymo vehicle may be at fault for what took place. We don't know yet, but that's the first one. Interestingly enough, the legislature had been talking about driverless vehicles a while ago. And in fact, there was legislation that was passed in 2017 dealing with autonomous vehicles. And so there's actually a statute already in place. It is, let's see if I can get the statute here. Yeah, it's 42.4.242. And it's permits an automated driving system to operate a vehicle if the system can comply with applicable state and federal law. And what is important is liability for a crash involving an automated driving system driving a motor vehicle that is not under human control is determined in accordance with applicable state and federal law or common law. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
It means that the individual who maybe gets hurt by one of these vehicles, the standard is the same whether or not it's a human or a robot
right,
driving
yeah.
the vehicle. But what you have to prove is the person that was hit by this vehicle is that the computer fell below the standard of care. Essentially, that they were negligent in the way that they handled this particular situation and that it was foreseeable that this could happen. So it is going to be a bit more complicated because I think there's going to have to be some, maybe an expert relating to computers and the way that these things are handled mm-hmm. to make the claim against it. So it's going to be a super interesting process in which lawyers in Colorado move these claims forward. And how the insurance company that's representing Waymo defends these cases.
Right.
Because they could be pretty expensive to move forward depending upon the experts that you'll need after the normal things are happening with regard to treatment and loss of wages and all of those sorts of things.
Right. You're listening to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesh. Again, September 1st started the Waymo, the driverless car, and we're just kind of going through some of the things that want you to know about this. You know, are you at risk about insurance, different things like that. So it's going to, like I say, it's going to be interesting. I'm going to have to do one, get in one just to see what it's like.
Yeah.
And everything.
It's really an interesting process. Everybody should try it just to see what they think about it. I mean, it's much like anything else new that we sort of have show up technology-wise. It's just an interesting process.
Right. So would it be a deal? I come in to you and I say, hey, I was in this Waymo, and this accident happened. Would you want to see a report from Waymo even before you took a case, kind of? Because
So that's sort of the next step is what happens after this happens. So, obviously, if you're super hurt, or if you think you need emergency care, call 911.
Sure.
Get authorities there. But interestingly enough, as well, the Waymo vehicle should detect some sort of interaction with another vehicle or some sort of incident, and that should be a call into their main sort of where they deal with these sorts of issues, and their support team should immediately do things to preserve evidence relating to the crash. So that's the first thing, and just keep that in mind. The other thing is, just like any other incident involving a crash like this, you'll want to call the police and make a police report.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have the police come out and deal with it, even if you're not significantly injured or anything else. You're going to want to make sure that there's a police report that's made. The other thing that is interesting is the Waymo vehicle may just take off. You don't know how it's going to react. If it doesn't think that anything has happened, if it hasn't caused a sensor to believe that there's been an incident, that Waymo vehicle may just take off. So you may want to, after a collision, the vehicle may keep driving to reach a safe stopping spot. A lit dome light signals that the Waymo driver knows an event occurred. So if you see that the dome light is on in the vehicle, that is an indicator that they know something has taken place. Note the direction it goes and its plate number. So again, if it's just a fender bender, for example, and you don't have any personal injuries, but you know that you want to make a claim against them for the property damage, follow that vehicle so that you can make a report.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, if you can photograph the plate and the vehicle's markings, then you'll have to make a claim with Waymo. They will then go back and see what they have for video evidence. But you'll want to do that quite quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you're starting to get out of the car and all of a sudden the car starts taking off?
Could happen. Yeah, so that's, you don't have to get out of the car other than to take pictures.
Right.
Because there's nobody to to talk to. There isn't going to be it. You can't knock on the window and have a support team, I don't think, have a support team talk with you at all.
Yeah. Now, let's say you're sitting at a red light in a Waymo and somebody rear-ends you.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be considered just like a normal traffic accident in that case?
Exactly.
If the Waymo certainly was not at fault in any way?
Correct. Yeah, so that's a really good question. Will the Waymo then just pull over and allow you to get out and get the information from the other driver? I would hope it would. That's something that you're just going to have to figure out. That's a really good question. I would think there'd be a support on the app, like, hey, we were just in a fender bender, stop the vehicle so that you could get out and get information relating to the other vehicle, where it's not a Waymo problem.
Right.
Yeah, but those are the things that, I mean, you have to be safe. I assume that'll let you out of the vehicle. I don't think that they automatically lock the doors and don't let you out. So you'd be able to get out at the next stop.
Huh.
Yeah.
Man.
All interesting things. Super interesting. The same thing is, think about in a regular car accident, you're going to want to get any witnesses to what took place as well. So that's going to be on you, because undoubtedly the Waymo will have video evidence of what took place, but they won't have any ID or anything like that. There's not facial recognition that I'm aware of anybody that's in the area. You'll have to work on that and get that taken care of on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that you definitely want to think about, because you're going to be on your own for making those claims and getting those people involved in helping you.
And you would think they would carry a decent policy.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Waymo, my understanding is that it's much like any other rideshare, that it's probably $1 million of coverage that they'll have relating to the vehicle itself and the company. I mean, it's a big company. It's, you know, I think it's owned by Alphabet or one of the, you know, it's a big tech company that owns it. So they're going to make sure that they cover their exposure relating to these sorts of things.
Have you had any interesting cases with these rideshare?
Yeah, we've had a number of them. In fact, I've got one that we're really working on right now that was a rideshare that was actually hit by somebody else. That there's a variety of issues that come into play with the rideshares. It's what, you know, the same sort of thing as a regular car accident. If the driver of the rideshare vehicle, the one that you're driving in, is the one at fault, that's the primary focus.
Right.
You have significant injuries, the one case that I have has significant injuries, we have a number of limits relating to the at-fault parties, and then we also have significant underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. So hopefully we'll have enough limits. I don't think that's going to be an issue. It's just going to be the division of who's more at fault throughout the process of determining liability. My clients were actually passengers, so they didn't have any ability to control the situation, but there were three vehicles involved, so we've got to figure out exactly who is at fault for the injuries that were caused by the incident. But yes, there, you know, and it's like we had that strange case a few years ago where the motorcycle, remember the motorcycle was rear-ended?
Right.
The woman that was sitting in the back of the rideshare vehicle and broke out the back windshield and all of that. I mean, that wasn't really the rideshare company's fault.
Right.
But we did have issues relating to underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage in that case because of her injuries and the small policy that the motorcyclist had relating to to their vehicle that really caused the majority of the damage.
Right.
So those things, you know, if anyone is out there that gets involved in these sorts of situations, it's almost always that you're a passenger. You handle them just like any other claim. That's true. I had the other claim that I had a number of years ago was the rideshare driver that hit the cow down in Douglas County.
Oh, yeah.
That was super interesting, whether or not livestock on the roadway is a whole other sort of interesting twist about, in Colorado, whether or not the livestock was properly within fences, how they got on the roadway, and then you just got the issue of what color was the cow in, you know, and it was a dark night, and whether or not a black cow on the roadway is something that any driver should expect. So there's lots of issues that can come up with regard to these sorts of cases when you're talking about a rideshare company and just the strange things that happen on the roadway. Mm-hmm. And that's why these Waymos are going to be so interesting to see. Whether, I haven't heard of any that are outside sort of normal urban areas, because I think that's almost more controlled than, let's say, driving out on the eastern plains and you have, you know, or up in the mountains where you have a bear or an elk or something else.
I wonder if you can get in one and say, take me to Breckenridge.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know,
that's something that, that,
or if it's like you say,
yeah, I think just, it's, I think they have a, actually I do know that. I think there's a specific sort of, it's a 60 square mile zone that they've opened up. So it includes downtown Lodo, Capitol Hill, Cherry Creek, Coors Field, Ball Arena, and Empower Field. And so that's sort of the area. So it's within the Denver, kind of what you think of as the Denver metro
area.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Again, you're listening to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesch, 303-806-8886, always a free initial consult. No matter what, you know, we're asking about what their insurance coverage is. Do you know your insurance coverage? That is something you need to know. So, Kevin, let's kind of touch on that a little bit. You know, folks need to pull out their policies, and, you know, most of the time we're just trusting our agent to, and we renew year after year, and we don't really think about our life, maybe how's it changed, have we added a teenage driver, whatever the case may be. So what about some insurance thoughts here?
Yeah, so absolutely. So the rideshare issues have sort of resolved themselves relating to policy limits. You don't have to worry about those when you're in that vehicle, when they're in a passenger in that vehicle. But it's always really important every year, annually, to really look at your assets, what you have, what you're willing to risk relating to getting into a car accident. There's a number of different types of limits with regard to your insurance policies. What we think of as the sort of the state minimum limits is relating to bodily injury coverage, and that bodily injury coverage is related to if you hit somebody, what is it that they could get from you in the way of a judgment, and what is it that your insurance company would pay as a limit. So the state limit is $25,000 minimum, which is really nothing anymore, right?
I mean, do you ever see that change? What would it take for that to change? Because it's ridiculously low.
It is ridiculously low. I think the reason that it hasn't changed is because, as we know, there's about a third of the population that still doesn't have car insurance on a regular basis. And so I think the legislature's thought relating to that is that if it's so low and we still only have two-thirds of the people complying with the statute, if we raised it, that would probably increase. So we'd then have 50% or 60%. So that's why I think it hasn't been changed. But at any rate, it is low, but it is the minimums. But that doesn't mean that's what you get.
Sure.
I mean, for any of us, I think, that are in a situation where you own a home and you have some equity in the home and you have some other assets, you have to consider those things. And most people would at least have a 100, 300 limit, which is sort of 100 per person, 300 for the total accident. That's gonna deal with the majority of the claims that are caused. You know, the other thing is that cars just in general, I think, are safer today with all of the safety things, the airbags and everything else, and seatbelts, all of the things. And they're just made different to protect the occupants in the vehicles. I think over the last 30 years, that's what I've certainly seen is in regards to vehicles and how the impact upon them reduces the human impact inside of the vehicle. They just are engineered better to protect us.
Right.
But there's still obviously lots of times where people get hurt and significantly hurt. So those are those things you need to think about when making a determination relating to your limits regarding bodily injury coverage, because that really takes care of you in the event that you do something negligent to somebody else. Mm-hmm. You've then got sort of your med pay coverages, and we've talked at length about that. That's sort of changed over time. It all depends on what your health insurance copays are and what it is that you want to are willing to take on for risk for paying out of pocket. But a lot of our insurance companies now, car insurance, will give you know, I think $5,000 was sort of the minimum med pay, but it'll go up to $100,000 now relating to med pay. And it all depends, again, how much you want to insure relating to that gap in coverage regarding your health insurance. If you don't have health insurance, this may be a good place that you buy extra just to make sure something happens in a car accident, that you have the ability to use that.
And is the right phrase to use that? That's kind of, I mean, that's kind of free money you never have to pay back?
Correct.
I mean, right?
Yeah, it is. It's exactly that. So there's no subrogation right for the insurance company to get repaid that. So in cases where we represent lots of folks that have MedPay, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 in MedPay, it's like a little savings account for you. And you want to kind of keep that close to your vest. You don't want to immediately give that to the ER, because the ER loves MedPay, because other insurance they have contracts with, and so they may get reduced rates relating to the contractual agreements that they have with those health insurers. MedPay most of the time doesn't, and so they pay the amount billed, which may be 50-75% more than what they would actually pay if they had a contract with the health provider. Same thing with the ambulance. So those, you know, ambulance rides that are $1,800, $2,500, $3,000 billed, again, they get a reduced rate depending upon their contract with the health insurer, with Medicare, Medicaid. Those are things that you don't want to give them your MedPay information, because they'll suck up that money real quickly. And you can use that money later for your prescriptions and for other copays that maybe you didn't really, you weren't ready to pay,
right,
that you may be able to get reimbursed for through MedPay. And then you don't have to pay it back when you get the case resolved.
Right.
It's one of those things where those monies are gone from the insurance company. They won't be able to get any reimbursement, which is a fantastic deal as well.
Sure.
Because remember, your health insurance pays all your medical bills, generally speaking, if you have it. Then we negotiate on the back end when we get the case resolved. Let's say you have $25,000 of medical expenses billed, but they only paid $5,000 of that. We then have the ability, when we settle the case, to negotiate that $5,000, mm-hmm, so that then you pay a less amount by reimbursing them for that.
Right.
And those are all things that we can help with. But getting back to the insurance,
sure,
the last thing that you have to consider is the underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage that you have. That's insurance for you,
right,
when individuals who don't have insurance or have these minimum limits hit you, and then you need additional coverage. And you want to buy as much as that as you can afford.
Sure. Yeah. So MedPay, take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
Uninsured, underinsured.
Yep.
Three big categories.
Exactly.
There.
Exactly.
Well, it's going to be interesting. And, hey, if you get into a Waymo and you have an interesting story, let us know here,
yeah,
at the station. We'll get you on. And, or if you hear of anything, and it's going to be interesting. I'm going to try to do that over the next few weeks and just see what it's like.
Yeah, I think as people use them, especially I would say users of technology that maybe aren't real sophisticated, and I would say I'm in that camp, it was actually quite simple to get,
yeah,
it set up and do it for the first time. And quite seamless. I mean, you don't have to tip a driver or anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But you do have to get it set up ahead of time, and then make sure your right, GPS is on so that they know where you're,
yeah,
at.
Yeah. And was the fee kind of alike,
yeah,
an Uber?
I think
whatever?
It was a little bit cheaper, but it was, okay, very comparable.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Pretty interesting.
Yep.
Kevin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesh. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, folks, always a free initial consult on your legal matter with Flesh Law. 303-806-8886. We'll be right back.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
Zip around the neighborhood, commute to work, or ride the trails on an e-bike. Hi, I'm Randy Carancy, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are electric bikes that are fun and easy to ride. Pedal assist technology flattens the steepest hills. At eBike of Colorado, we have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Just try it. Take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
How much do you need to lower your monthly mortgage payment? $200, $300, $400 or more? As rates decline, take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage. 720-895-0500. Over 24 years of saving Coloradans money. Low rates, lower payments, less costs. What makes us different is we listen. As an independent mortgage broker, we shop the top lenders to save you the most. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Want to purchase your next home? You can't qualify unless you sell your current home? Let us show you how to get the down payment out of your current home. Qualify for the new one, and then sell yours for the most. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. So you want to buy a home. Let us show you loans that can save you money, low down payment, first-time home buyer specials, fixed rates in the fours with buy-downs. Call for details, 720-895-0500, or apply now at aimortgage.net. That's affordable interest mortgage, where it's all about you.
Regulated by DORA, NMLS 217-147, Equal Credit Lender.
Looking for great deals on hunting, fishing, camping, or shooting gear? Then make your next stop the Outdoorsman's Attic, located at 2650 West Hamden in Sheridan. Hey, this is Scott Watley, and listen, whether you're buying or selling, you'll find quality new and pre-owned outdoor gear for hunting, fishing, and camping at prices that you won't believe. From firearms and optics to fishing tackle, camping gear, and more, there's always something new to discover. Stop by the Outdoorsman's Attic and see why Colorado sportsmen keep coming back. Tell Billy Scott sent you, and you'll get the Sportsman of Colorado Radio discount on all hunting and fishing gear, excluding firearms. Colorado's largest consignment store for the outdoors. It's the Outdoorsman's Attic, where the outdoors begins and the adventure continues.
You're listening to AM 560 KLZ, your home station.
Haystack Help Radio brings you Your Legacy, Your Way, the show that puts you in control of your future. Hosted by Scott Watley and featuring estate planning attorney Carolyn Duncan, this program is your go-to source for everything you need to know about protecting your assets, your family, and your legacy. Whether it's a will, a trust, or a full estate plan, if you don't decide, the state will decide for you. Attorney Carolyn Duncan brings the experience you need to help you gain peace of mind and avoid costly legal pitfalls. So ask yourself, what kind of legacy do I want to leave behind? Don't wait for a crisis before you plan. Now here's Your Legacy Your Way with your hosts, Scott Watley and Attorney Carolyn Duncan.
Welcome to Your Legacy Your Way. My name is Scott Watley. We are glad you are with us. Our show is brought to you by Duncan Legal. The number 303-394-2358. Our exclusive estate planning attorney, Carolyn Duncan, has been kind enough to offer a free consultation. We say about a half hour. We want to be fair to you and fair to her, but hey, there is a free consultation available. And again, the number is 303-394-2358. And with that, we will welcome Carolyn Duncan. How are you, ma'am?
I am doing just good. How
You're
about
ready
yourself?
For fall?
You know, I am. Last weekend, Florida State played in week zero.
Yes, they did.
I'm not sure I'm understanding week zero because they're saying opening weekend is this weekend.
Yeah, but I was wondering myself how that happened. Yeah.
Well, we play on Labor Day too, so there we go.
Yeah, it is. I'm ready for football.
I like football.
Yeah, it is going to be a fun time. Well, hey, if this is your first time to join us, and I say this every once in a while, welcome. We are here every week at this time with Carolyn. And as we always talk about, this topic is something that, you know, everybody knows about, but it's hard to get people to understand the urgency sometimes. And it may be because of your age or younger, or you're healthy and you think, hey, I'm good, or hey, my husband knows what to do, my wife knows what to do if something happens. But you know what, folks? It's got to be written down. And that's the way it's going to go best, and that's what Carolyn can help you do. And we talk a lot on the program about the importance of having an estate plan, but today we're going to look at something that can be just as important. So, you know, you did the responsible thing. You met with an attorney, maybe. You think you've created a will, powers of attorney, trust, maybe, whatever. And you put everything away in a safe place. But then we can say it this way. Life happened. Maybe you got married. Maybe you got divorced. Maybe a spouse passed away. You welcomed grandchildren into the family. You retired. You bought or sold property. Perhaps your financial situation changed dramatically one way or the other. So the question becomes then, does your estate plan still reflect your life today if you have something? So, Carolyn, let's start with this. If somebody feels like they have some sort of plan, what do you do, and what is your way of doing business? If they want to bring that in and have you kind of review something like that and look it over to just see what they have,
mm-hmm.
How does that work?
You know, I do that. And it just depends on what you have me looking at. So, for example, if you're looking at your powers of attorney, you know, those you just redo. You don't amend them. You just do them again. If you're having me look at a trust or looking at a will, then my usual position is, hey, why don't we restate this? And then we're making it my documents, not me trying to fix somebody else's documents.
Right.
And we just kind of go from there. And we just did some wills not too long ago where they did their powers of attorney and all that. 2022, some time frame around in there. And it's like, on, well, you know, if you don't have any changes to that, then yeah, I just keep those. And
okay,
we just redid the wills for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess number one question is an estate plan really ever just finished? It's never just like, see you that one day, get it all, and then to the end of life in most cases, right? I mean, we should check it, but I mean, how would you answer that question?
I don't think it ever is finished, because as we grow and change and age, it's doing the same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You may have minor children. Well, they're no longer minor children.
Right.
You may have some more assets. You may go, ooh, why did I do that? Don't want to do that one anymore, kind of deal. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it changes with you. It's not, as I have said out loud, I don't chisel it in stone.
Right.
You know, it's not there of one and done.
Mm-hmm.
You may not have to look at it every month or every year or every couple of years, but it's not. It does change.
Right, right. So would you say there is is there a general rule of thumb, I guess is the old saying, of when you would say, hey, if you don't think anything changed, it's still good to look at it every 2 years or 3 years or 4 years?
I mean, what would you think? I think so. And it's probably anywhere in there, every 2 to 3 years, you know. And if you go out 5, you're probably still pretty good, depending on what's going on. You know, some people look at it more often. We have somebody that, oh gosh, I think I did the first one in 2014, and they come back every couple of years, and they came back here, and you know, we've reached a position where it's like going, okay, I can't give you what you want with this kind of document, but I can if you switch over to this one.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision was made, okay, we're going to make this revocable trust into an irrevocable trust, because she wants the asset protection as well.
Right.
And she's reaching that age where it's appropriate, you know. It's not like she's 30,
mm-hmm.
Kind of deal. And so, yeah, she comes back every couple of years, and we just kind of take a look at it and go from it. And the last time I saw her, I knew she had some questions, but I wasn't expecting us to go from here to there.
Sure.
But you just have to sit down and listen, and then go, what is it that you're trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so let's go to the first one that usually changes people's lives, and these go hand in hand, marriage and divorce. So we'll start with marriage, the happy part. If someone gets married after creating an estate plan, how important to have those documents reviewed?
You know, it's going to depend on what it is. If it's a second marriage, they might want to consider having a marital agreement, you know, that what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours,
okay,
kind of deal. Or if it's a blended family, what are we going to do with the blended family? I've got children, you have a child, how are we going to do this kind of deal? So you definitely want to look at that in regard to what are you doing. You know, there's one out there that we did a while back where she had children, but her divorce was just going really fine, and his, you know, ex-wife is taking her back every other day, it feels like, or, you know, that's what they kind of said. And it's like, okay, yeah. So you have to be careful with what it is and what you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
But you need to have those discussions up front, because if you don't, and I'm not saying everybody has to get a prenuptial agreement, but if you don't and you're married and you pass away, you may have this estate plan, but it may not really do what you want because you didn't talk about the new spouse.
Right. Have you ever had a deal where, like, somebody put a beneficiary on the insurance policy itself, it listed a name, but maybe when they did an estate plan, they listed someone else, or something? Has that ever, anything
well,
like that ever
know,
come?
Yeah, well, yeah. And what's going to happen is whoever you listed in that life insurance policy, that policy is going to control.
Okay.
So you could have said it over here, oh, I can't imagine that I would put life insurance in my will or estate plan, but you could, saying, hey, the proceeds of my life insurance goes to X, Y, and Z. But if you have 1, 2, 3 listed on your life insurance policy, that's who's going to get it.
Okay. Again, Carolyn Duncan is with us. It is Duncan Legal, 303-394-2358. Okay, now the other side, divorce. That can obviously change the family and financial relationships dramatically.
In a couple of ways.
And do you see that?
I do.
Have you seen that more over the last 10, 15 years? I mean,
it can change it in a couple of ways. One, the legislature, Colorado legislature, has recognized for a very long time that when someone gets divorced, that, hey, the first thing I got to change is my estate planning documents. You know, they realize, ooh, that may not be your first thought.
Right.
So if you get divorced and you've got your spouse on everything, the law says, well, if even though, let's just use wife died and husband's still alive, if wife didn't change her estate plan, the law's going to treat it as if the husband died before her, and it will flow down to those secondary beneficiaries, and it'll flow down to the successor personal representative or successor trustee.
Mm-hmm.
And even on life insurance, if the spouse is named as the on the life insurance, then they don't get the life insurance
right
kind of deal, because you know you didn't do it. But then there's the other side of the coin, where sometimes that life insurance is out there because it's there to secure an obligation such as alimony or maintenance payments or child support payments.
Okay.
So you need to, okay, the law is going to treat it as my spouse died, but if I have a decree that says I got to provide the life insurance, well, then you need to go and make sure that they know that as well,
right,
so that they don't treat it as if the spouse, oh, yeah, predeceased, you don't get it. And it's like, oh, no, yes, I do, you know, kind mm-hmm. of deal. And then sometimes, depending on the age of the children and things like that, or if one spouse had a lot more money than the other one, there are provisions in there that flow into, okay, spouse is going to get this and going to get that. So, yeah, you have to look at the divorce decree and see what it says and make your documents go hand in hand with it.
Right. Can a judge ever go against what's written down, thinking, you know, that really wasn't fair what that person did? They can't.
So if you're getting a divorce, it's one of those things that we are an equity state. We're not community property. And equity says you do what's fair. And what's fair doesn't have to be 50-50 to be fair.
Okay.
Okay. Depending on circumstances and things like that, it may be perfectly fair that you get 30% and you get 70%
mm-hmm.
kind of deal. But if you did your estate plan and you pass away, and the judge won't necessarily come out and say, well, I don't like what you guys did and I'm not going to follow that.
Right.
You know, there would have to be some kind of contest of, hey, I'm objecting to this, or I'm filing my motion that I'm supposed to get this, or you have to have some kind of
proof of something.
Something.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So when you say what estate planning document should someone review during or after a divorce, I mean, me personally, I guess I would think, first of all, are they my financial power of attorney? That's where I would think first. Or are they the one going to unplug the, you know, machine on me? But what would you really want to look at there?
Well, I'm gonna go backwards for a minute.
Okay.
And I would have interrupted you, but I'm like, okay. Another thing that's really important upon a divorce is sometimes they say who needs to be on the life insurance policy. And it could be the other spouse, you know, kind
okay.
of deal, for the benefit of the children, that, hey, you've got to have life insurance, but the spouse is going to get it. But the other thing is, if you've got minor children, and you're, I used to get this a lot of going, I don't want my spouse to raise these children. I'm going, well, you know, you can indicate who you want to be the guardian of your children. I'm not saying it's going to happen because the parent's going to take priority, but you can at least put it in your will of going, you know, I want my mom to be the guardian of this minor child. And I said, that might open the door for you to get what you want kind of deal.
Gotcha. Interesting. Try to stay married. It's cheaper. Okay.
So now we're on to somebody died is what I...
Yeah. All right. So, you know, and of course, we all know losing a spouse. And to be transparent, Carolyn has been that way as well. And so she has experienced that. But after that a period, what documents are we looking at possibly surviving the spouse have reviewed?
You know, I think you kind of have to look at the whole picture. Because in my case, I did have Bill, my spouse, listed as everything. And then it came down to, it would have been my brother Bill after that in terms of who would be responsible for gathering the assets and paying off the debt and distributing what's left over. You know, I've kind of had some thought changes. I know I've changed my medical power of attorney of going, well, wait a minute. My very good friend knows me better than my brother who doesn't live here and blah, blah, blah. And so I made that change and made her my first choice for the medical power of attorney because when things are going on with me or whatever, she's the one I'm talking to.
Right.
You know, I'm not necessarily picking up the phone and saying, hey, bro. You know, this is what's going on kind of deal. And I haven't quite made up my mind if I'm going to make changes in other areas. I'm still trying to figure out, well, where do I want my stuff to go? Because there's this part of me that says, I don't want to leave it to my brothers.
Right.
You know, they're not going to leave me anything. So, and it's not that I'm trying to get something. I'm just saying,
sure.
I need to decide for me, where do I want my stuff to go when I pass away? And I've been thinking of some charities. I've actually been thinking of, you know, nieces and nephews kind of deal. But, you know, we're 6 years down the road and I still haven't made the change, but I think about it.
Right.
And that's where it gets complicated for people.
Right. And a lot of times, like you say, that person was listed and we always talk about this. And I guess the word would be, who's your backup people? You know, are those people going to stay the same after a death? Because it could be they were family now and maybe, you know, there's already strife, which there always is in families after this, unfortunately. So are those backups even going to stay the same?
Right.
So you might be want to review that.
Yeah. You know, and you're exactly right. I just happened to make my decision first on my friend on the medical issues, and she teases me, and she's like, oh, and well, you know, one day we need to sit down so I know exactly what you want me to do. And she's like, oh, that would be a perfect podcast. Hey, I made my best friend my power of attorney. Now what do I do?
Right, right.
You know, and she's right. And I'm like, well, what do you want to know? I said, you know a lot of it.
You know, the more people I talk to in my age range in their 60s, right? Later in the 60s even, try to sit down with their family members, a little off topic here, but I just thought of this, and say, look, Mom and Dad, what do you want to do? And man, these older parents do not want to discuss this. Why is there such, I don't know if they feel like, you know, I mean, these are their kids. They know they love them, hopefully, and you wonder why there's such a, obstinance to wanting to talk about this and plan with families, you know, because it is about your legacy, your way, and that's the idea about it. But I mean, I don't know, just an off the wall question.
You know, and it is tough because I ran across a potential probate case that I'm like, ooh, yeah, I hear you, and I see the problems. I think you need someone else. You know, that I'm not even going to put my toe in the water because I'm going, oh, wow, you guys did this at the last moment. And I even asked, I said, well, you know, I don't think an attorney prepared these documents, did they? And it was like, no. And I'm like, well, why did you do that? Well, you know, I don't even know who they used, but why did you use an online? And they were just trying to save a dollar. And then I would go, well, why is this worded this way? Well, we didn't know any better. And I'm just like, I can see that, you know, but now nothing can be done because the person passed away.
Right.
And it's like, ooh,
yeah,
you need someone else.
Sometimes that's best for both. Yeah, for sure. All right, moving on. Children, grandchildren. You know, hey, they grow up, they get married and have children of their own. So how should the birth of children or grandchildren possibly affect an estate plan?
You know, I think as people age and all that, we did a plan years ago where she has two children, and it was equally divided, but she was giving gifts to the grandchildren of, you know, $5,000 or whatever it was. And then, you know, now she's come back and she's like going, well, my children don't need this, so I want to increase the amount of my gift to my grandchildren who are just starting out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, changes like that come into play all the time because they're like, oh, you've got more money than you need. These people are either in college or just getting out of college or starting that first job or whatever. And I think a lot of people think that way sometimes of going,
yeah,
I don't necessarily have to leave it to my children, but maybe, you know, I can help my grandchildren more so.
Right, right. So can people designate to, like for grandchildren, hey, I want to leave this amount of money, but it's got to go towards education. Can you direct money?
You can do that, but you always have to have an end point, so to speak. So what happens if you say, hey, I want them to use this money to go to school? That's perfect. College.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, vocational school or whatever it is. But what happens if you have a child that either doesn't want to go and do that, or they're very lucky and fortunate and they got scholarships and all that, and they don't, you know, so you can't limit it. And, you know, sometimes I've seen, oh, yeah, I want it to go to education. And then if that doesn't work, then, you know, purchase of a house or something. But you have to be able to have an endpoint where the child can get the money even if they don't meet your condition.
Right.
Because if they never go to college and never get the college degree, how do they get the money?
Mm-hmm. True. Again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Your Legacy Your Way with Attorney Carolyn Duncan. And as I mentioned earlier, we're here every week at this time. Her number is 303-394-2358 for your free initial consult. Does it happen sometimes when people do have a plan? That's kind of what we're talking about today, of maybe updating a plan or making sure everything is still as you would wish today as it was when you had it drawn up. Where maybe they've got that will-based plan, as you call it, and then you look at things and you say, hey, yeah, you need to move some of this to a trust-based
mm-hmm.
plan. What does that kind of mean in just layman terms for us, moving something maybe from a will-based plan to a trust-based plan?
So it really kind of depends on what you're trying to achieve. So if you've got some assets, and you, let's say you have a house and maybe a rental or a vacation home and all that, and you're getting up there, you may want to go from a will-based plan to doing some sort of asset protection. Whether we like it or not, assisted living, nursing homes, they are not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like you've got these assisted living and memory cares that are on every corner like 7-Elevens. And I'm always shocked of going, oh my goodness, you know, this is $12,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to sometimes start thinking about it, going, yeah, I got plenty of money, but at the same time, at $12,000 a month, and you've got, let's just say, a house that's worth $300,000, you divide $12,000 into that and see how long it's going to last.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just getting out of sight in terms of that. And, you know, so sometimes that's a good reason to change over of going, yeah, that will work, but it's not going to maybe accomplish what you're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's just this real quick. Here's one I think is good for us. If a lot of people move, if you go to another state, you know, Colorado continues to have people moving both in and out of the state. But if someone had an estate plan prepared, you know, in another state and then moves to Colorado, do they need to have something done here in this state to make that all binding, or how does that work?
Now, we're a mobile society.
Huh. Yeah.
It's going to move with you. But depending on what you're doing, I'll have people that just move into the state and they are, you know, can you look it over? And, you know, more than happy to do that and make suggestions. But usually one of the first things I start out with is, well, what is it that you would change from your original trust to make it different, mm-hmm. you know, or are you just concerned about the laws kind of deal?
Right.
Because if you're really not going to make any changes, then what you have will work for you. And I'll just use the example of a trust, because the trustee, whether it was written in Texas and you're in Colorado, the trustee's job still is to gather the assets, pay off the debts, and distribute what's left over. And even if it went into a litigation because someone's not happy with whatever, we are supposed to interpret the trust under the laws in which it was drafted. Now, I don't know if that really happens because I've never litigated anything like that.
Right.
We're looking at it. But I know that my documents say, hey, this is to be interpreted under the laws of Colorado. But I hope that the vast majority of what I'm doing, they're not going to court over it because they have disagreements.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, but it will move with you. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be making changes and you want to do this now and you want to do that, well, then let's just restate it, keep the name and the date, but make it conform to Colorado. But
yeah.
Not everybody needs that.
Yeah, true. So here's the big thing. Your estate plan should reflect the life you're living today, not the life you were living 10 or 20 years ago. Would that be a way to simplify it?
Yeah, it is, because, I mean, I get a lot of people that they come in and they say, oh, well, you know, we did this because we had little kids and now our kids are in their 30s. Okay, life changed. Now mm-hmm. what do you want to do? You know, hey, do you want them to be in a position that maybe they're one of the successor trustees or something like that?
Right.
Or, you know, do they have their own health issues going on that maybe you want to protect them and put it in a supplemental needs trust because you don't want them to lose whatever entitlements they should get, whether it's at the federal, state, or local level
mm-hmm.
kind of deal. So, you know, things happen. Things change.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you've been listening to Your Legacy Your Way with Attorney Carolyn Duncan of Duncan Legal. And the number again, 303-394-2358. And when you call, be sure and let her know you heard her here on KLZ 560. And we would appreciate that as well. So, Carolyn, as always, thank you for your time. And we'll look forward to our show next week.
There you go.
303-394-2358. Hey, don't put it off. You know what? Let's get it done. Just give her a call. Say, Scott sent me. She'll get you fixed up. Look over what you've got. And get that peace of mind for you and your family to have your legacy your way. Thanks for being with us today. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.